It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, in some Wisconsin lakes, it goes from too cold for swimming to too gross for swimming because of blue-green algae. A Wisconsin limnologist tells us what's going on. First, Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney has been officially kicked out of her leadership role with House Republicans. The vote came earlier this morning after Cheney continued her criticism of former President Donald Trump and his false claims about the 2020 election. We're talking about that story and more in our weekly look at the top stories in Washington. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the vote to remove Cheney from that leadership position? If you're a Republican, do you want to see your party stay close to former President Trump or plot a new course? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nicholas Wu is a reporter for Politico who covers Congress. Nicholas, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Can you tell us how this vote went this morning?
It was really quick. This entire meeting was held behind closed doors, as are most Republican conference meetings, but it was over in 15 minutes. They held a voice vote, and that was it. Congresswoman Cheney was removed from her position in leadership. No one else spoke up in support or opposition during the meeting, and she gave some remarks at the top.
I want to give a listen to Representative Cheney on the House floor yesterday in a speech. She restated her criticism of former President Trump and his false election claims. Here's a little bit of it.
Attacks against our democratic process and the rule of law empower our adversaries and feed communist propaganda that American democracy is a failure. We must speak the truth. Our election was not stolen, and America has not failed.
That was Liz Cheney yesterday, and it doesn't sound like she's changed her tone since that vote this morning. Nicholas, what have we heard from her since then?
Not at all. I mean, at the very beginning of the conference meeting, she basically had to keep on fighting. And you know, she said that she'd be leading the fight to restore the Republican Party to what she saw as its conservative principles. And she actually ended her remarks with a Bible prayer saying, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." She also spoke to reporters immediately after and gave some very brief remarks, basically showing that she wasn't backing down from her position at all.
What have we heard from leading Republicans about the argument for removing her from this number three spot among House Republicans?
Well, the interesting thing about Congresswoman Cheney is that she's really much more conservative than many other Republicans. She's definitely she's not going to be switching parties anytime soon. So what this really came down to was her support for impeaching President Donald Trump over the January 6th insurrection and over some of her previous criticisms of the president. This is really something that had came up among Republican members and to a large amount of the caucus who saw her basically as out of line with their support for the president, or the former president, rather.
Talking to Nicholas Wu from Politico, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the decision by House Republicans to remove Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming from a leadership spot in the House over her criticisms of former President Trump, and what you think about the future of the party, the role of the former president in the future of the Republican Party. 800-642-1234. Nicholas, some people have characterized this as kind of a civil war amongst Republicans. Other people saying that war is over. This is a purge. The pro-Trump side has won, and they don't want voices that are critical of Trump getting in the way of the race for Congress next year. Where do you read that?
This is definitely something that Democrats are seizing on. I mean, right as it looked like Trump was going to kind of fade away, he's been banned from Facebook, he's been banned from Twitter, he's lost most of his platforms. This brings him right back into the spotlight. And you know, almost immediately after this vote happened, you started seeing fundraising emails coming from Democrats saying that they wanted to basically soliciting donations and really bringing back Trump as kind of the boogeyman behind a lot of this. And to Democrats, this is something that they think can not only help them keep their current hold on power, but also expand their majorities in the House and Senate. Now, whether that actually happens remains to be seen.
Right. Generally, it seems like when you're the outside party, as the Republicans are now, you want to focus on the current occupant of the White House, in this case, Joe Biden in 2010, Barack Obama, finding fault, criticizing where you think they went wrong on policies. I don't know. Do Republicans want to be having conversations about Donald Trump in particular in 2022, even though they need his support in many ways?
It really depends on who you talk to. A lot of Republicans really do see the former president as making a huge difference for them, but others, for sure. I mean, they would prefer to be talking about anything else, whether it's jobs or infrastructure or any other topic besides the former president.
The future of this leadership spot, Representative Lee Stefanik of New York has been the main person people are talking about replacing Liz Cheney. I understand there's some talk that someone else may throw their hat into the ring. What's going on with the replacement process now?
Well, that's all very much in flux right now. Tonight, Stefanik is meeting with members of the Conservative House Freedom Caucus to try to shore up that front. And then tomorrow, House Republicans are going to have their candidate forum where they will hear from Stefanik or really anyone else who decides to run for this position before they go and actually vote for the position on Friday. So far, Stefanik is the only one running. But like you mentioned, yes, there is potentially one other person who might run among others, and that's Congressman Chip Roy, also a member of the Freedom Caucus, this conservative group from Texas.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in Green Bay. Mary, hello.
Hi. Yes, I have to say that Liz Cheney had it right. It made my skin crawl every day when I heard the racial slurs, I heard the bad-mouthing, the name-calling, making fun of people, things that we teach kids that they shouldn't do. And yet the person who we're supposed to hold in high esteem was doing that every single day. What does that show, how we're supposed to act? And I hope he doesn't get back in. I'd like to see him leave the world, actually. So she's got it right, and I thank her for coming forth.
Mary, thanks for the call. So, Mary, I think pretty clearly there, Nicholas, not a fan of Donald Trump, even before January 6th. It took until then for some Republicans to speak up about President Trump. Most of them didn't stick with it very long, unlike Liz Cheney.
Right. I mean, the Republican Party is still trying to figure out where they'll go forward from here. I mean, Congressman Cheney spoke to reporters after this vote and said very explicitly that she would do everything she could to keep former President Trump out of the Oval Office again. And, we still don't know if he's actually going to run again or not, but that possibility is very much there.
Thanks for the call, Mary, at 800-642-1234. Well, speaking of looking to the future here, we've got President Biden now meeting with the congressional leaders from both parties, so the big four, the party leaders in each chamber of commerce, I think for the first time in his term. What do we know about this meeting between Biden, Pelosi, McConnell, McCarthy, and Schumer?
Well, congressional leaders came out of this, and Republicans really threw down the gauntlet here. I mean, they drew what they are explicitly calling a red line for any kind of infrastructure package, and that is how you would pay for it. Democrats really want to undo parts of Republicans' major tax reform that they did in 2017 to pay for parts of the bill. Republicans are saying that's entirely off limits. So, this is going to be all part of the give and take as they haggle out this proposal. How are you going to pay for it? What can both parties actually come to an agreement on? If Democrats actually do decide that they want to go with a bipartisan bill.
Yeah, and the bipartisan bill, to get bipartisan support, it seems like there'd have to be a smaller bill or smaller bills divvying up some of the things that are in this couple trillion dollars over a decade or so from the Biden administration. Do you see Democrats talk along those lines like, yeah, maybe we don't go for everything at once?
It depends on who you talk to. But I mean, I think the fact of the matter here is that, and as a lot of Democrats see it, they hold a really slim majority in both the House and Senate. And as many Democrats see it, there's not really a whole lot of incentive for Republicans ultimately to work with them. So let's just say they even could come up with smaller bipartisan packages on just, say, the traditional infrastructure bill of like roads and bridges and pipes and the like, and then take out some of the other parts like the child care and what they're calling like social infrastructure and do that in other bills. It's not clear they would get any Republican support for those anyway. So if you're not going to win any Republican votes in the end, why not just do everything at once and get everything you wanted?
We're talking to Nicholas Wu, congressional reporter for Politico. He's with us today to round up some of the top stories in national politics. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see President Biden work across the aisle? Do you want to see Republicans in Congress reach out to work with President Biden and his fellow Democrats? What, if any, kind of infrastructure bill would you like to see passed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at the top stories in Washington. Nicholas Wu is with us from Politico, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the ouster of Liz Cheney from a leadership position, the prospects for bipartisan cooperation, maybe on infrastructure, 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. John is with us in Arena. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Just wanted to say that the whole Liz Cheney thing really points a finger at the Republican Party, in that Trumpism just seems like another a staple to the party now. It's almost as if Liz Cheney has become like, they're treating her as if she's like pro-abortion or something. You have people like Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham who were outspoken against him early on. Now they've just adopted him. I think it's going to split the Republican Party up.
John, thanks a lot for that call. Nicholas, what do you think? Do you see prospects for some splitting off from the Republican Party?
I don't think so. Congresswoman Cheney made it very clear that she's still a Republican and not leaving the Republican Party, nor even, as some might imagine, even becoming a Democrat. She still very views herself very much as a Republican. And I think... With the exception of a few folks over the past few members of Congress who have retired in the past year and then said that they were becoming independents, we're not seeing this movement within Congress itself. And even looking historically, it's very rare for third parties to fission off like that. And when they do, look at, say, Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party, they don't really do very well. And they end up splitting the ticket in other ways.
With John's point about ideology, Liz Cheney very much in the mold of the Republican Party of, say, 8-12 years ago on a lot of issues. And now it's changed a lot. More hostile to immigration, calling for tougher immigration laws, at least less professed interest in overseas military actions. Have you seen the ideology of the party in some ways leave someone like Liz Cheney behind?
Someone like Liz Cheney actually was already on the right side of the party, so to speak, to begin with. I mean, she already very much was a military hawk. She took a harder line on immigration. The person who could very possibly replace your Congresswoman Stefanik actually has a more moderate voting record than Cheney. I mean, she voted against Republicans' big 2017 tax reform because of what it would do to cap the deduction New Yorkers could take on state and local taxes. I think what we're seeing now is less about ideology and more really about Trump, frankly.
Let's bring on one more caller on this issue. Jackie is with us in Milwaukee. Jackie, hello.
Hi. I wanted to say that I've been a registered Republican for almost 30 years now. Although my political bent is a little more libertarian, but I will not vote for a Republican, because unless it was a very good person, you know, who I agreed with. But because of the Lindsey Grahams and the Ted's Cruz's and the Ron Johnson's and all these people who put party over the people and over decency and ethics.
Jackie, can I ask, is there someone in Wisconsin recent Republican history or national that you'd point to and say, yeah, that's the kind of Republican I would vote for?
I would say, well, Reagan, that goes pretty far back. The Bushes, to me, weren't bad. You know, I'm conservative, but more libertarian, where people should still have rights, smaller government, fiscally responsible and rights for gun control.
Jackie, thanks. Sorry to put you on the spot there. I was just really curious. So, Nicholas, I guess a big question in Republicans' minds is how many Jackies are out there who we used to have their vote probably guaranteed, and now, at least as Jackie says, case-by-case basis, depending on who's running?
That's a good question. I mean, I think former President Trump, in a lot of ways, really scrambled a lot of the political framework there, since, you know, he didn't quite fit into the mold of a traditional Republican in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, for example, fiscal conservatism, you know, really worrying about the deficit was not a major concern during the Trump years. And, you know, he really struck at a lot of these kind of core tenets of conservatism. I mean, look at how relatively dovish he was on a lot of foreign policy. So all that being said, I think the next few election cycles are really going to be a major test of whether or not there is some sort of broader political realignment going on here, where, you know, these voters like Jackie, for example, might see themselves drifting away from the Republican Party, or if you have a more quote-unquote traditional Republican come along that can bring them back into the fold. You know, we'll see if that happens or not.
Jackie, thanks again for that call. We're talking to Nicholas Wu from Politico about big stories in national politics. Nicholas, I want to spend a few minutes on a story you've been following, police reform and some divides. So we've been talking about Republicans mostly now some divides among Democrats on the issue of police reform at the national level. What kind of things are you seeing?
Well, there have been negotiations going on for the past few weeks between lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. And the unfortunate thing here is that many of these same issues that really tripped up negotiations over police reform last year, after the protests over George Floyd really spurred Congress to try to take action, are again tripping them up. So a very good example of that is on this legal doctrine called qualified immunity, which effectively shields a lot of members of police departments from lawsuits. And Democrats are saying that they want this and any sort of reform to this to be in any police reform bill. Republicans, on the other hand, are saying that's a red line for them. So, you know, they had a meeting today on this. Democrats went in looking optimistic about things. And Congresswoman Bass told us afterwards that, you know, it was still their position that qualified immunity has to be eliminated. Whereas Senator Tim Scott, who's the main Republican negotiator here, told us that he was on the exact opposite side. So, you know, this goes to show that despite President Biden's end of May deadline to reach some sort of deal, they're still very much at an impasse.
Are there items when it comes to police reform that we are seeing enough agreement between the Republican negotiators and the Democrats, or at least there's some common ground as they try to deal with things like qualified immunity?
It looks like one major issue that had previously been a sticking point where they're coming towards some sort of agreement is on these transfers of military equipment to police departments. You know, this has become highly controversial, as you would see videos of former military armored personnel carriers and other things rolling through city streets in response to protests. Both sides are saying that they're getting warmer on a kind of deal here, but, you know, without any kind of actual bill text, the devil is really in the details. And we don't really know yet if this is going to be something that, progressives and conservatives and both parties will be okay with, let alone the activist base, which is very much clamoring for action here.
And then another story you've been following, Nicholas, threats against members of Congress going up, according to Capitol Police, especially since, I imagine, January 6th. What are we hearing there?
Yeah, I mean, this was really startling disclosure from the Capitol Police, and it comes as right now they're debating a potentially multi-billion dollar a bill that would provide more funding to provide security for the Capitol and to provide more funding to the Capitol Police. This was a big spike in cases, and it's been on the rise for years. So this is weighing really heavily on lawmakers' minds right now. I mean, some have hired private security. Others have really shelled out on high-tech security systems for their houses. It's a very real concern for people here.
How much is January 6th looming over the minds of people in Congress? Hearings still going on about it, and at the same time, some Republicans saying, that's behind us, let's move on. I don't know. Is this still something that people are really talking about?
It's very much on people's minds here. I mean, for a lot of members of Congress and staff and reporters that were here on the 6th, it was a very traumatic event, and people are still processing that. And so today, for example, there was a major hearing on this where we heard from the former acting Secretary of Defense and the acting Attorney General about basically the Trump administration's response to the insurrection. And Democrats were rather unsatisfied with their answers. And Republicans, on the other hand, some during this hearing had actually basically tried to downplay some aspects of the insurrection. And, this is something that is disrupting things even on a member-to-member level. The Democrats are saying that, like, with Republicans thinking this way, how can we possibly work with them? And this is going to be a continual problem here.
Nicholas, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No problem.
That was Nicholas Wu, congressional reporter for Politico, with us to talk about some of the top stories in national politics, including House Republicans removing Liz Cheney from a leadership spot. Coming up after the news, it's getting warm, which means that soon some Wisconsin lakes will no longer be safe to swim in as blue-green algae forms. A Wisconsin limnologist tells us why blue-green algae has become a bigger problem in recent years. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show, climate change is a global problem, but some Wisconsin communities are looking for local solutions. Find out how a Monroe County task force is tackling global warming tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, Wisconsin lakes are warming up, opening the door for swimming season. But as they warm up, some lakes will become unswimmable again because of cyanobacteria, a.k.a. blue-green algae. An analysis from the Environmental Working Group finds that Midwestern states, including Wisconsin, they say don't adequately test lakes for cyanobacteria. We're talking now about blue-green algae and how it affects ecosystems and human health, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Does your local lake go from yum to yuck as the blue-green algae shows up? Do you avoid swimming or fishing in lakes near you because you're worried about whether it's safe? Do you have questions about what this stuff is, why it's there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Grace Wilkinson is an assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology and principal investigator of the Wilkinson Limnology Lab. Grace, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking about some of my favorite things, algae and lakes.
Now, let's start off with the basics of blue-green algae. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not actually algae?
Yeah, so what we commonly call blue-green algae or cyanobacteria are actually bacteria, but they do photosynthesize. So just like other algae or the plants that you might have in your yard or what's coming up in your garden right now. So they are green, usually microscopic. They are able to photosynthesize, but they are in fact bacteria. So a little different than what we would normally call algae.
And this is something that just exists out there in nature. We're more worried about the levels of it, that it's very existence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, cyanobacteria are found in every ecosystem, nearly every ecosystem around the globe, in the terrestrial environments, in our lakes and rivers, as well as in the oceans. It's in fact the most abundant photosynthesizing organism in the oceans. But it is, it's about the high, when we get really high levels or concentrations of cyanobacteria, some of them have the ability to produce toxins, what we sometimes call cyanotoxins. And that can be harmful to humans and wildlife. And so it's when we get to those high concentrations and are potentially producing those toxins, that's when we get concerned.
Yeah. What kind of harms do we worry about when there's lots of this stuff?
Yeah. So cyanotoxins are actually, there's a bunch of them. One of the more common ones that we usually see in freshwater environments are microcystin. But what these toxins do to humans, if you accidentally ingest them and they're at really high concentrations, you can have gastrointestinal issues, so vomiting or diarrhea. It can cause headaches or fever. Sometimes there is a skin reaction, and so you can form a rash. And actually, if there's long-term exposure in high concentrations of these, they're actually toxic to the liver. And there's also evidence that, in fact, maybe they mess with your kidneys and reproductive system a little bit as well.
How widespread are problematic blue-green algae levels around Wisconsin?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I think that's a lot of what this report was getting at, was trying to understand when and where these toxins are produced, right? And so when we might need to have some concern about being in those water bodies. And so we tend to see toxic algal blooms show up, or what we call a toxic algal bloom or harmful algal bloom. So one that's producing these toxins, when there's really high concentrations of nutrients, when the water is really warm. So we tend to see them a little bit later in the summer. And that's when cyanobacteria are just really good at outcompeting all the other algae for resources. And so they'll proliferate and they'll produce these toxins. And so in areas where we have lakes and reservoirs that have really high nutrient concentrations, we might expect the possibility of cyanotoxins being present at times in that water.
Talking to Grace Wilkinson with the UW-Madison Center for Limnology about blue-green algae, that stuff that makes maybe your local lake unswimmable for parts of the summer. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Give us your lake report. A little early for blue-green algae now, but is this something you worry about from year to year? Do you have questions about it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Maybe you have a picture you can share from years past. Now, Grace, this Environmental Working Group report saying, in effect, we don't know enough. We don't have enough data in waterways around states in the Midwest. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think that the report highlighted a really important knowledge gap that we have right now about where and when some cyanotoxins might be produced. And so, you know, if we had all the money and resources and time in the world, it would be great to be monitoring for cyanotoxins all the time in all of the water bodies that we have. But we have, thankfully, 15,000 water bodies here, right, in the state of Wisconsin, just this beautiful water resource. But not all of those water bodies are ones that we're recreating in, necessarily going fishing or swimming in on a regular basis. And they might not have really higher nutrient concentrations that we associate with these cyanotoxins. And so while the report pointed out the need for more data information, I want to make sure that we're careful about thinking that about when is, what's the best use of our resources? What's the best time and money spent by state or local government agencies to try to get a handle or an understanding about whether or not cyanotoxins are a threat in those water bodies. And I think one thing to also point out as well is while the Environmental Working Group report focused on state agencies and the work they're doing to collect this information and try to warn the public if there's a potential risk, there's also a lot of work that's happening at more the local level and local agencies, public health departments and whatnot. So I know, for example, where I'm calling from here in Dane County, Dane County has a toxin monitoring program for the major lakes like Mendota and Monona. Here within the city and within the county. So there is some information. And if folks are concerned or wondering about their lakes that they love to go fish and boat and swim in, I would encourage them to reach out also to their local public health department or county parks leaders to just find out a little bit more information about what's known about the lake.
You've mentioned a couple times, Grace, excessive nutrient levels in lakes creating the conditions for an algal bloom of this cyanobacteria. What nutrients are we talking about?
Yeah, great question. So mainly we're talking about nitrogen and phosphorus. And really it's phosphorus here. When we have more, phosphorus is usually what we call a limiting nutrient. So there's not enough of it around in the environment, but if you add more, you're going to get more algal growth. And nitrogen can also be limiting as well, but it tends to be phosphorus that we associate the most, or is most tightly coupled to how much algae can grow in the water body. And so thinking about what are the sources of phosphorus that are making it into a lake and the sources of nitrogen and these nutrients, they're largely coming from the watershed, right? So the land that's surrounding the lake that drains into that water body. And so what we as humans do, our activities on the watershed and adding those nutrients, whether it's through urban and human waste, agriculture, manure from livestock, all different sorts of kinds of sources of these nutrients, that eventually makes its way into our waterways. And that's what's fueling these algal blooms.
We heard from Dave on Facebook who says, I thought algal blooms are the unfortunate consequences of fertilizer and other runoff. Dave says he met a young woman from Finland while windsurfing on Lake Monona, that's in Madison, and she grabbed a handful of algae and lamented the condition of the lake. So fertilizer, one of those nutrient-rich products you were referring to there?
Absolutely. Yep. The fertilizer that we're using both in agriculture as well as on our lawns and whatnot. So there's lots that we can do as individual property owners, but a large portion of those nutrients in these watersheds that have a lot of farming or agriculture in them is coming from those sources. And so thinking about how we keep those nutrients on land and not in our waters is one of the best ways to start reducing these harmful algal blooms. But the kind of the sticking point or the problem is once those nutrients get into the lake, they tend to end up getting stored in the sediments and they can be released slowly over time. So it's this legacy of nutrients that have been added to this to the lake for even previous decades that could be fueling the algal blooms in part that we're seeing today. So even if we stopped adding nutrients now, and we didn't have any runoff from our watersheds, there's essentially this ticking time bomb of nutrients in the sediments or the bottom of a lot of our lakes that are going to keep fueling these algal blooms.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. Is this the type of algae that sometimes you hear about a pet, you know, a dog, jumping into the lake and dying from whatever's in the water?
Okay, thanks for the call. We had another caller who couldn't stay on who's asking, if my dog drinks that lake water during blooms, should I be worried? You mentioned this briefly, Grace. This is something we worry about our pets in the water, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, I have a dog owner as well, and I think about this a lot when I take my dog to go to the lake. So yes, this is that kind of algae that you've probably heard about in the news. Last summer, it was covered pretty widely when it was two dogs that died in North Carolina. And that's if you think about our dogs, they tend to be smaller, right? And so if they're getting big gulps of water because they're out splashing and they get those cyanotoxins in them, it's going to have a much larger effect. And so it has led to pet and other animal death. And that's been well documented. So when I go out to the lake with my dog, I always check and make sure that I'm not seeing lots of green scum on the water. And what I'm really looking for is sort of a, when I say scum, it almost looks like pea soup or a paint on the water. And if that's the case, then I just don't let him get into the water and keep him away for any algae that may be dried up on the beach or whatnot too. Because, you know, being safe is the best if I can prevent it. And if we are at the lake, I just make sure to keep an eye on my dog afterwards in case there was, when I turned my head for a moment, he had the opportunity to take a drink of water. So keeping an eye, and if you see any worrying signs, contacting your veterinarian right away.
Thanks for the call, Kay. We're talking to Grace Wilkinson, assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, principal investigator of the Wilkinson Limnology Lab. We're talking about cyanobacteria, commonly known as blue-green algae, in our Wisconsin lakes. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this a problem in your local lake? Have you been part of an effort to try to stop the flow of nutrients into the lake? As a farmer who works near a waterway, for example, or in your local city, Call in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your algae sightings, and your experiences. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with UW-Madison limnologist Grace Wilkinson looking at blue-green algae or cyanobacteria in Wisconsin lakes. Still time for your questions, maybe your experiences in your local lake at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Grace, I've been asking you about impact on humans and our pets. How about the actual ecosystem in a lake if we've got these problematic algae blooms?
Great question. So I think the first thing to start with is that algae are an important part of a lake, and cyanobacteria are a part of that as well, right? They form the base of the food web, and it's the energy that gets fixed through that photosynthesis that makes it all the way up to the fish that we like to eat and all the other animals, right, that we really enjoy seeing in the lake. But when there's too much of it, when we have these really large algal blooms, there definitely are consequences for the ecosystem. And one of those is that when that algal bloom is going, right, it's producing a lot of oxygen because photosynthesis produces oxygen. But once those algae cells, those cyanobacteria start dying, then they're going to start falling down in the water column towards the bottom of the lake and decomposing. And decomposition uses up oxygen. And so it's going to cause a drawdown in the amount of dissolved oxygen that's in the water. And organisms, the ones that we're really perhaps really interested in, if you enjoy fishing, right? Fish need dissolved oxygen in the water in order to survive. And so it can cause some pretty serious problems. And if those dissolved oxygen concentrations are changing too rapidly and over the course of a day or whatnot, that causes a lot of stress for things like fish and so can lead to issues and even fish kills sometimes.
We got a call from Matt in Oshkosh who couldn't stay on the line. He says in Deer Lake in Sawyer County, Matt says, I've never seen a bloom until last year. And Matt wonders, is this an effect of global warming? Grace, is that something that's a part of the picture here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know for that specific lake, but certainly global warming and climate change are playing a role in what we're seeing happen with these harmful algal blooms. And the way that is sort of twofold. First, thinking about it in terms of global warming and the water getting warmer. Cyanobacteria love when the water is warm. And when it's really warm, that also makes that water more stable. And so they just thrive and they can outcompete and really get going. And that's when we know when they're at those high concentrations, they might start producing those toxins. And number two is thinking about climate change in terms of changes in precipitation. And here in Wisconsin in the upper Midwest, what we're seeing very clearly for the past couple of decades, and it continues to ramp up, is an increase in the precipitation intensity and frequency. So these really big storms happening more often and being larger. And when we have really big rain events or really big precipitation events, that's taking those nutrients from the land around the lake and bringing them all at once into the lake. And those nutrients can really help fuel these algal blooms and help them get going. And so it's that interaction of both being warmer, but also having a lot more precipitation delivering nutrients that is probably altering the way that these algal blooms and these lakes are changing over time.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. I just had a couple of questions. We live in Madison, but we visit friends during the summer at a couple of lakes. They have lakeshore property, and sometimes there'll be these blue-green algae blooms that get more noticeable. I'm wondering if we have concerns about the kids playing in the water and also the panfish that we catch off of the pier. So I'm just wondering, is there anything that a homeowner can do to kind of clear that from their, shoreline temporarily,
yeah,
so that it's safer? And then also, are the panfish that we would catch off here, are those safe to eat? Is there any concern with that? Thanks.
Yeah, those are great questions. So in terms of the algal blooms piling up along the shoreline. You definitely see that, especially if the wind gets going. You might wake up the next morning and something that didn't look like a bloom is all of a sudden a scum right in front of your dock. And that certainly happens. And so it's hard to overcome the forces of wind. And so there are certainly some lake management companies out there that might have some temporary solutions, although I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath. It can be really difficult. Again, you're trying to overcome the forces of water and wind, right? And where those algae are going, they can't overcome it. And it's hard for us to as well. So I think just using caution, right? Anytime that you're seeing a lot of green scum, that's not a great place to go be splashing around or spending time. So that might be a good day to be out on the boat and farther away from the shoreline. Or if you're just not feeling safe, a good day to just spend some time outdoors in another way. When it comes to the panfish question, a bit of good news there. So definitely these cyanotoxins do make their way into the food web. And so they do make their way into fish. But lots of studies have been done in trying to look at where those toxins end up within the fish. And as I mentioned a little bit briefly before, these microcystin toxins, they're a liver toxin. So we see the highest concentrations in things like the livers, kidneys, and intestines, and those don't tend to be organs that we're eating. And while there are definitely detectable concentrations in the tissues, the muscle of the fish, and that's the part that we usually eat, right, when we're doing our fish fries, there are toxins in there, but they're very low concentrations usually. And so unless there's a very, very bad toxic bloom and it happens a number of times over the lifetime of this fish, so it's accumulating that toxins, eating those fish are unlikely to be a danger to an individual.
Thanks for the questions. We're talking to Grace Wilkinson from the UW-Madison Limnology Department, looking at blue-green algae in Wisconsin lakes. Go back to your calls now. Patrick is with us in Menominee. Patrick, hi.
Hi, Grace. Nice to talk to you. In 2011, I invented and designed, built a machine to remove surface hepatotoxins or the blue-green algae up here in Dunn County. I'm in Menominee, and we have that extreme problem up here in Lake Cedar and Lake Monoman, which are part of the Red Cedar Waterway, which runs directly into the Mississippi River. So all was going fine and well until I was working under a DNR permit to do such until we disposed of it. And then we had issues with the health department and we had issues with the DNR and trying to dispose of such BGA. Mm. So my understanding is now in Madison, they are doing some removal of the BGA off the lakes down there and just simply disposing of it. The issue was with me was that I couldn't dispose of it because it would be removing it to an extra area with neurotoxins and hepatotoxins involved in it that they were afraid that we were going to...
I'm going to jump in, Patrick, because we're just about out of time. But Grace, you mow the lake, in effect, take this blue-green algae out, and what do you do with it then?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I can see where there is definitely that conflict there because it's this toxic substance and then removing it, where else do you put it, right? And so I have heard about this, what's happening here in Madison and with some blue-green algae removal. I'm not particularly familiar with the project, so I won't comment on that, but I definitely sympathize with that in being an issue, right? When you're taking something toxic out of the water in order to use that water resource, what do you do with the toxin, right? And it does persist in the environment. There are some bacteria that will degrade it and whatnot, but we don't necessarily want to be moving toxin around without knowing if we could reduce the potential harm to others. So that's a real catch-22.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Good luck getting that figured out. And Grace, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
That was Grace Wilkinson, assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, principal investigator of the Wilkinson Limnology Lab. She joined us for a look at blue-green algae in Wisconsin lakes. Still time to share your thoughts and experiences. What have you seen in lakes in your area in the last few years? Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, loneliness was on the rise even before the pandemic, and social distancing made it harder to connect for many people. But our guest says we have a need to connect and tells us how young people have found ways to do it. Buying a house can be tough to do right about now in some communities in Wisconsin and around the country with hot markets and bidding wars. A real estate expert gives us the latest, and you could share your stories. Plus, a return to live concerts may be on the way. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced its newest list of inductees today. I wasn't on it, but actually on this year's list, Foo Fighters, The Go-Go's, Jay-Z, Carole King, Todd Rundgren, and Tina Turner. Winning the Musical Excellence Award, LL Cool J, Billy Preston, and Randy Rhoads. And for their influence on music, Kraftwerk, Gil Scott-Heron, and Charlie Patton. I want to key in on that last name. Charlie Patton was a legendary blues musician from the Mississippi Delta. So naturally, a lot of his most legendary recordings were made in Grafton, Wisconsin. Why? Well, as I learned in the Central Time conversation back in 2015, Grafton was home to Paramount Records, which recorded a lot of jazz and blues artists in the 1920s and 30s, including Ma Rainey, like the one in the movie. It was a record label started by a furniture company called the Wisconsin Chair Company. That furniture company made, among other things, stands for phonographs. So they took a logical step into making their own record players. And hey, if you're making record players, why not record some music you could sell along with them? They went into business with a label that specialized in music by black artists, ended up taking over recording sessions when that company went out of business. In recent years, music experts have gone scuba diving in the Milwaukee River looking for records believed to be dumped by Paramount when they went out of business. Here's Charlie Patton, High Water Everywhere. This is Central Time.
I was going to the hell of a country, but it got me bummed.